Welcome to the broadcast of Crosstown Church of Memphis. We are a church that is Christ-centered, diversity-driven, and community-committed. A church that's bringing people together, sharing God's message of hope, love, and service. We seek to love God, love people, and serve the city. We welcome you to our broadcast with Pastor Byron Fitzpatrick.
Well, again, welcome to Crosstown Church of Memphis. We're glad that you all are here today. And we're going to get straight into our word for this morning. We are continuing a teaching series that we titled Rice, Beans, Jesus Christ, and Byron. You know, yeah, that's me. That's right. So in this season, we are now on part five of this series. And in this, our main point that has been driving us throughout this entire series, and that is sharing our differences, is living in true community. Jesus Christ desires that we live in a true community. And one of the things that I talked about is that, you know, during this, we are now entering into the third year of this pandemic. And during this pandemic time, one of the things that we have, one of the things that's been impacted, you know, in a negative way is community. You know, because we've had to do a lot of isolation, a lot of, you know, separation, a lot of things that we've had to try to learn how to navigate through this pandemic time. But we've had to distance ourselves, you know, social distancing. And, you know, we wasn't gathering like we used to gather before. Wasn't, you know, the numbers of people going to events and parties and cookouts and all those things has just kind of, you know, went down. You know, people's workplaces has gone down. You know, a lot of places right now, you go different places, especially like restaurants. You know, there's not a lot of people working in public places anymore because some, you know, for all different types of reasons. But this pandemic has basically disrupted how we used to do community. But we're getting to a place where we're really learning how to navigate through this season. And hopefully it's going to be over here, you know, sometime soon. And, you know, like I say, we can get back to life as normal. Well, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But regardless, you know, we're learning how to live and navigate in a time where, you know, where our community has been disrupted. So with that being, we have a great opportunity right now that we need to take advantage of, and that is to reestablish what community really looks like. You know, the way community used to be, we can all find some errors. We can all find some room for improvement, some different things that we can do differently and what have you. And I believe that we're at a time right now that we can reestablish. A lot of people have reestablished a lot of things in life, the way they live life. A lot of people are reestablishing what their jobs look like, what their work look like, what their careers look like, reestablishing what their careers look like. You know, so we're at a place now where we can really reestablish what community, and especially true community, really looks like. And Jesus desires for us to live in a true community. So why not take advantage of this time and reestablish it, and let's shape it, let's define it, let's make it look like, feel like the way Jesus originally intended for it to be. And so our main point that's been driving us is sharing our differences is living in a true community. And that's what we want. We want to live in a true community, but we have to be mindful that our differences is really a huge component of what a true community actually looks like and feels like. Our main scripture is the book of John, chapter 13 and 35. It says, by this, everyone will know. This is words that Jesus was speaking. He said, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. If what? If you love one another. When we love one another, when we live in a community, when we live our lives where we're really demonstrating God's love, when we're really demonstrating the love of Jesus Christ in our differences, then that's a witness, that's a testimony, that's evidence that we are truly indeed disciples of Christ, that we are truly indeed representatives of Christ, that we are truly indeed children of the Father. Amen. Children of God. So in part one and two, I'm going to do a little quick review here, and then we'll get into the main point of today's message. Part one and part two, we talked about the importance of community and the value of sharing in the four F's. And we define the four F's as being friends, family, fellowship, and food. You know, Jesus, he really encouraged us to share in the four F's. Again, those are family, friends, fellowship, and food. You know, we've been looking at the life of Jesus Christ and looking at his examples of how he so often shared in the four F's and how he valued the importance of community. Not just sharing with people who are like us, but also sharing with people who are different from us. Not just sharing with people who are in our close-knit circles, but sharing with people who have a way of life that's different from our way of life. So often, you know, we navigate or we stick with the people who, you know, look like us, talk like us, sound like us, you know, have the same type of sense of humor as us, same culture as us. You know, it's people who are doing some of the same stuff with people who are within our close-knit circle. Jesus is letting us know, he's encouraging us that that's not true community. True community includes a real serious, diverse group of people, diverse in so many different ways. And so we learned that, you know, just like beans and rice are good just by, you know, all by themselves, you know, beans, they provide you with a good source of protein or carbohydrates. And protein and rice provides you with a good source of carbohydrates, which both of those are very good. So beans and rice are good all by themselves. But guess what? They are even better together. When you bring beans and rice together, they make up what is called a complete protein. Mm-hmm. And they're stronger in building muscle. They're stronger together in building muscle mass. They're stronger together in producing energy. They can do it good all by themselves. But together, they're even stronger. Just like beans and rice go together, just like beans and rice are good all by themselves, but together they're stronger. We, in ourselves, we are good all by ourselves. We are uniquely and wonderfully made. You know, there's nobody else like you. There's no one else like me. Now, there's people we have similarities to, people we have likeness to, but there's no one uniquely made just like you. God made you to be the person that you are, and you are beautiful all by yourself. You are wonderful all by yourself, but you are better when you are joined with other people. You are better when you are part of a community. And that's what Jesus wants us to really grab hold of, is that we're good all by ourselves, but we are better together. You know, in part three, we learned that some people have been labeled as sinners. And whether they've been labeled because of their past or their current activities, some people have been labeled, you know, even we talked about some people have been labeled as being sinners, you know, simply because of their employment. You know, we looked at a guy by the name of Levi. Jesus went to his house and he shared with him at his house and hung out with him and his friends, which he was a tax collector and he was labeled as a sinner. His friends, you know, was labeled as sinners. And the church folks got on Jesus and got on the disciples for hanging out with them. And Jesus let everybody know, look, guess what? I'm not condemning them. I'm not tripping off with that. They, you know, we all are here together. And, you know, sometimes we can look in our communities where people have been labeled as sinners, and even within our families, within our friend circles, maybe, you know, within our own blocks and streets and communities, people have been labeled as sinners. And we automatically kind of dismiss them from being a part of our community. We dismiss them from being a part of our fellowship. We dismiss them from participating in the four F's with us: family, friends, fellowship, and food. And we just kind of exclude them. We kind of leave them out. We push them out and not bring them in. Jesus is letting us know. He said, hey, they are a part of your community. Include them. And he hung out with what you call so-called sinners. All right. And part four, which was last week, we talked about we talked about people that in our community that are constantly left out, people in our community that we just constantly forget about. And sometimes we deliberately do not include them. We deliberately exclude them because of their differences. You know, people, there are some people that we just don't think about. We leave them out. We just, we're not going to invite them to the cookout. We're not going to invite them to the party. We're not going to invite them to go out to the movies or go out on a date or anything. Like, we're not going to invite them because they're just a little bit too different. All right. Too different. You know, man, Jesus, there was another dinner that he went to at someone's house, and it was a church leader's house. And there was a guy there who had this disease or this physical disability or ability physical ability that was called the droopsy, where he had an arm and his legs were swollen, you know. And we have people in our community who are poor. We have people in our community who have different types of physical and mental abilities that are different from our own. And sometimes we just don't even think about including them in our activities. We don't include them in our community. We exclude them. Sometimes we do it just because we don't think about it. Or sometimes we do it deliberately because we feel like they're just a little bit too different. Or maybe they can't do some of the things that we want to do or some of the activities that we're going to do. We may not invite them out to dinner because we're like, man, they got a physical or a mental ability that's just not going to fit in with the crowd right now. Or just not going to fit in with where we're going right now. You know, we cannot use that as an excuse anymore, any longer. We need to make sure. And Jesus told him, he said, remember the poor. When you have a cookout, when you have a gathering at your house, why not invite the poor? Why not invite the blind? Why not invite those that are lame? Why not invite those who are crippled? You want to invite your family, your friends all the time, which is good. You want to invite your rich neighbors all the time, which is okay. That's cool. He said, but what reward is it? Only reward that you have in that is that when they have some, they'll invite you over too. But when you think about those people who are constantly left out, those people who are constantly excluded, Jesus says there is a greater reward in including them in your community circle. So that was our review for today. So now we're about to get into the message for today, the focus for today. And the subtitle, if you're taking notes, the subtitle of today's message is called Let's Take a Trip. You guys like to go on trips. I love to take trips. I love to do road trips, whether it's, you know, short distance, long distance. Well, I don't like to do long distance road trips.
He does most of the driving.
But sometimes you have to do them, all right? I like to get on a plane. I like to go. I like to leave the country. I like to take trips. That's me. I like to take trips. You know, I remember talking to one of my little cousins. His name is Ricky Jr. Some of you in here that are family members, you know of him or know him. Ricky Taylor, our cousin, he passed away a few months ago, but his son, who was Ricky Jr., I was talking to him, having a conversation with him, and he said something to me that I don't want to say it blew my mind, but it just disturbed me because I've heard this so many times, you know, even throughout my life, I've heard this from different people so many times. And when I hear it, I'm like, oh my gosh, just wake up. I want to just yell, wake up. Y'all remember this movie School Days? At the end of the movie School Days, Lawrence Fishburne, he was standing in front of the camera with a big old face and ringing the bell in the school courtyard. Wake up! I just want to shake people sometime and tell you to wake up. Wake up. Anyway, I was having a conversation with him. And in this conversation, he told me, he said that he never leaves Orange Mound. Okay, Orange Mound, for those of you that don't know that are on here, it's a community in Memphis. Actually, it's a historical community. It's actually credited as being the oldest Black community in the nation. And so anyway, this is a neighborhood that I grew up in. And Ricky Jr. told me, he said he never leaves Orange Mound. I was like, dude, come on, man. Come on. There's so much more. He said everything that he needs and everything that he wants is right there in Orange Mound. The only time he leave Orange Mound is to go to work, and that's it. And then he come back home. He said, I'll never leave the mound. He'll never do nothing outside the mound. Everything he do is in the mound. I said, bruh, Memphis is so much bigger than the mound. So there's so much going on. I love Orange Mound. Okay. I do. I love Orange Mound. I'm pride. You know, two fingers round, three fingers down all day long, you know, bleed orange. I love Orange Mound, you know. But Memphis has so much more to offer than just Orange Mound. You know, I try to encourage him, like, man, come on, you got to get out. Come do some of this with me. Come do this. Look, let's go over here and do that. Let's go over here and do that. No, man, that's outside the mound. I ain't doing that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, bro, wake up. There's so much more. That there's so much more that he's missing out. Orange Mound is good. It's beautiful. It's historical. There's so much culture, so much history in Orange Mound, so much pride in Orange Mound, so much art in Orange Mound. I love Orange Mound. But as good as Orange Mound is by itself, guess what? It's better when there's so much more that Memphis has to offer. And so your experience with Orange Mound becomes greater when you experience Memphis as a whole. You know, there's a time me and Marguerite, you know, we have a lot of friends, you know, we've traveled internationally. And so we have some friends in different countries. And And one of the countries is Costa Rica. You know, we have a lot of friends in Costa Rica. We got a lot of friends in Costa Rica. Okay, let me put it that way. And so there was a time where, you know, some of my friends used to invite me to come to Costa Rica all the time. And they're like, man, why don't you come to Costa Rica? You know, do a mission trip with us, do a mission trip and come to Costa Rica and stuff. And I was like, I don't want to go to Costa Rica. You know, and it's like, I really did want to go to Costa Rica, but I just didn't want to go to Costa Rica for the reasons that they wanted me to go to Costa Rica. And so one day I decided, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna go to Costa Rica. We're going to Costa Rica, right? So we went to Costa Rica. We put together, organized a mission trip, and we went there and took a team of 10 people with me. And so I have some photos that I want to share with you guys as I'm talking about this. But so we went to Costa Rica. We did a little mission trip there, and it was great. It was fun, you know, had met a lot of new people and so forth. So here are some pictures. Where am I at? There. Can y'all see the picture? Oh, yeah, there's a picture. Okay, so here's a picture right here where, you know, we're in Costa Rica, and right this particular picture right here, we're at a park and we're actually doing some outreach or doing some ministry to people in the park. People were just coming out, listening, what have you. Right here, there's a little girl to come up to me and, you know, grab me around my leg and hug me around my leg. I was actually ministering. There was a whole group of people that was out there, you know, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, she just come to me and hugged me around my legs. The young lady standing next to me in a pink shirt, her name is Yvonne, and she was my interpreter. This is her sister Raquel right here and her husband. And, you know, here's another time where we was in a park and we was ministering at a park. This is a very unique situation right here. So there's a couple parks we went to and did some ministry in. This was a very unique situation right here. I'll tell you real quickly. We was out here ministering in this particular park. There's a big giant gazebo. I mean, there was like lots of people in this park, you know, and there was a basketball court that was really close by. A bunch of young people, young adults, and they was out there playing basketball. They were smoking weed, and I mean, they was getting high. I mean, it's weed everywhere. You know, they was talking crazy. You know, it's just what we got in the hood, right? It was no different. You go to the park in Orange Mound, same thing, right? And so we're performing a particular skit, and somebody's singing a song. We're doing ministry in this gazebo, and they were really bothered by us doing this. They was, you know, saying obscene things toward us and what have you. And so, you know, a couple people in our group who are not familiar with, you know,
areas like that,
stuff like this. Yeah. So we here we are in Costa Rica. So we're in the hood of Costa Rica, right? And they got a little nervous and a little scared stuff. I said, man, okay, this is what we're going to do. So we were doing this particular skit. I said, we're going to come out this gazebo. We're going down there and we're going to go courtside. And we're going to do the skit down there courtside. So we took the whole thing. We took the whole ministry that we was doing out of the gazebo. And they were looking at me like, Pastor Byron, are you sure you want it? Let's go. Come on. We're going to put this courtside right there beside the court. I said, they want to talk about us. They want to treat us like this. Let's take it to them. And we took it to them. And we did the skit. We did a skit right there. Right. Am I lying, Marguerite?
No.
By the courtside. Right. And here's a picture of the skit. We did the skit in the church, but then we took the same skit and we did it out there on the court side. Right. So anyway, we was out there. We was having a great time. We're doing ministry and so forth, you know, so we went out there and we're just having a great time, you know, so there was something that happened. You know, we did a whole bunch of ministry, and I'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on. But something special happened. Something unique happened. That particular day that we were out there, you know, ministering at this park and, you know, like I just described to the people at the kids at the basketball court acting a fool. So we just took the ministry down there to them and came home, got back to the States. And within a week, I got a message on Facebook. And I'm like, who is this person? You know, I don't know this person, whatever. And I ain't never seen them before. So I looked them up to see who it was. It was a 19-year-old kid from Costa Rica. How he found me, I have no clue. I don't have no clue whatsoever. He found me on Facebook and he messaged me and he told me, he said, I saw you guys out. He said, I was out there at the park when you guys were ministering. And he said, I saw how people, you know, the other kids were talking to him, talking crazy, you know, treating you guys badly and whatever, but y'all just kept going on. He said, I was standing off in the distance in the back. He said, I didn't come up close because I, you know, he didn't want to, you know, get it caught up in the mix or whatever. He said, but he stood back in the distance and he watched us and he listened to us. And he was so thankful. He was telling me how much he really appreciated what we did. And he appreciated the message that we were sharing and the ministry that we was doing or whatever. So he was really impacted by that. This guy, we have kept in touch over the years, you know, and every now and then, you know, I'll see him on Facebook or he'll see me on Facebook. I can't think of his name right now. I was actually searching for him yesterday. And because I couldn't think of his name, I couldn't find his picture to show him to you. But we still keep in touch from time to time when we'll see each other, pictures or something pop up on Facebook. But even to this day, we still have a presence in each other's life because of something, you know, because of a decision, you know, that I made to go to Costa Rica when I was invited to go to Costa Rica. And, you know, there are so many things, you know, that Jesus is desiring for us to do. He's desiring for us to experience in our lives. But because we say no, then we miss out on so much more that this world, that this life, that Jesus, that God has to offer for us. So we're going to look at a story in Jesus' life where, you know, he took a road trip. You know, Jesus took a road trip and there's something that happened that I think he wants us to learn from. He wants us to glean from. You know, you maybe you've heard this story before about the woman at the well. You know, for those people who spend a lot of time in church or maybe you studied the Bible, you know, this is a familiar story, but it's called the woman at the well. And here it is. Jesus is traveling from Judea to Galilee. And as he's traveling, he had to go through a town or area that's a countryside is called Samaria. And while he was traveling through Samaria, him and his disciples, he decides to make a pit stop. You know, when you're making a road trip, if you're driving or something, you got to make a pit stop. Or even if you're flying, sometimes you got to make a connection flight here or there, or whatever. You make a pit stop, you know, you got to go to the bathroom, got to gas up, got to get some food, some snacks. You might be hungry or whatever. So he and the disciples, they make a pit stop through Samaria. And he stopped there. And that's the place that he stopped at is a place called Jacob's Well. All right. Jacob, there at Jacob's well, he and the disciples, he stopped there to rest, you know, to relax for a few minutes. And he sent the disciples in. He stayed there at the well by himself. He sent the disciples into Samaria to get some food. All right. Because he was hungry. While he was resting there by himself, disciples are in town. They're getting some food. The Samaritan woman, she shows up. She comes to the well and she has a bucket. She's drawing water out of the well. Jesus looks at her and he says to her, he asks her, he tells her to give him some water. You know, he didn't have a bucket. He didn't have a bucket and a rope to drop down there in the well to get some water for herself. So as she was pulling water out, he said, hey, can I have some water? So they're having this exchange. It opens up this exchange and conversation. And this exchange and conversation, you know, it started off, it kicked off as them talking about their cultural and racial differences. And I know some of you, for those of you that's heard this story before, I want you to look at this story. I want you to hear this story in a different way. I'm going to show you something that so often we never paid attention to, okay? Excuse me. So as they start the conversation off, they start off by talking about cultural and racial differences. All right. In the book of John, chapter 4 and verse 9. So this story, if you want to read this story, the woman in a well, you can read it in its entirety in the book of John, chapter 4. OK, book of John, chapter 4. But I'm going to read verse 9. It says this. The woman was surprised because Jesus was a Jew and Jews didn't have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus. She says, you are a Jew. I'm going to read this. As I read these certain scriptures to you, I'm going to try to read them in the way that I imagine this conversation went. So often people read these scriptures and they read scriptures in the Bible, and I don't think they put the right emotion, the right, you know, tones in some of those things, and they sound different, you know. So here's, you might hear it like this. the woman was so surprised because Jesus was a Jew and Jews didn't do anything with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, "You are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" No, 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 no. All right. This woman asked Jesus, Jesus at the well, she draws some water out. And Jesus said, Hey, can I have some of that? Can I get some of that water right there?" Jesus looked at Jesus like, the lady looked at Jesus side eyes like, "Hey, okay, wait a minute. You a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. Why are you asking me for water? Y'all don't have nothing to do with us. Y'all don't even mess with us like that. Why are you asking me for some water?" Okay. Jesus looked at her like, "Oh, okay. So here, I want to know this. How did she know that Jesus was a Jew? How did she know? There's no indication what here that Jesus said, I'm a Jew. Can I have some water?" No, he didn't. He didn't have a sign around his neck or anything like that. But as soon as Jesus asked her for some water, she knew automatically that he was a Jew. How did she know he was a Jew? Okay. You know, he had to have had something about him. Something about him had to tell her, had to, you know, shine lights to say, "I'm a Jew." Something about him had to say that I'm a Jew. Maybe it was his skin color. Maybe it was his hair texture. Maybe it was the way that he dressed. Maybe it was his accent and his speech. You know, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was. I'm not going to claim I know what it was, right? But I do know this. There was something that let her know that he was a Jew and she was a Samaritan. He had to have known that she was a Samaritan. Maybe it was because of the area that they was in at the time. They was in Samaria, okay? But so they automatically start having this conversation about culture, about race. She's like, "Dude, you a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. Why are you asking me for water?" All right. The conversation then, it went from talking about their culture, talking about their race, to talking about their ethnic differences. Okay. Pay attention to this. They start off and they're talking about racial differences. They're talking about ethnic differences. Racial differences. Then it goes to talking about their ethnic differences. In verse number 12, it says this. "And besides," the woman is still talking. She's like, "And besides, do you think that you're greater than our ancestors, Jacob?" She said, "Do you think you're better than Jacob, our ancestor, Jacob, my ancestor, Jacob? Do you think you're better than Jacob?" Because this is what Jesus said to her. He said that when he asked her for some water, because I'm skipping down skipping over some scripture. So you're going to have to go back and read it for yourself. When Jesus asked the lady for some water, one of the things that he responded to her, and he said to her, he said, "Woman, if you knew who you was talking to, you'll be asking me to draw you some water." He said, "I can give you water that's like living water." He said, "You drink this water right here. After you drink it, you eventually get thirsty again." He said, "But if you knew the water that I can give you, living water," he said, "you will never thirst again." The woman's like, oh, you got that good water, right? You got that quality H2O water, right? You got that blue water, right? Who's that water boy? The movie Water Boy. You got that water boy water, right? She's like, oh, okay. Verse number 12. "And besides, do you think that you're greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us this well? How can you offer water better than him?" So she's like, "Dude, how are you going to give us water better than Jacob? Jacob? Jacob was a saint. This is Jacob's well. Jacob, my ancestor. You think you got better water than Jacob?" So here's the deal. She doesn't realize that Jacob is not only her ancestor, but Jacob is also Jesus's ancestor. So here they're talking about racial differences, cultural differences. They're talking about ancestry differences, ethnic differences. And here she is, don't even realize that even in their differences, even in their racial differences, even in the differences of country where they're from, nationality and whatever that they're talking about here, she doesn't even realize that their ancestry differences actually have a common connection. There is actually a common connection there. Jacob is Jesus's ancestor as well, just like he is her ancestor. And she did not realize, even though they are different in race and culture, they have the same ancestry line. Now here, now the conversation, as we go on in this particular story right here, you know, the conversation takes another turn. It goes into another place, right? Now the conversation is taking a turn and they're talking about her personal life. So they go to talking about race, ethnic, culture, nationality. And then now they're talking about her personal life. And Jesus says to the woman, he was telling her about, you know, the Jacob's well, when she asked her about, you know, getting water from Jacob's well, if he can give better water than that. And Jesus said, you know, there's going to come a time of day where nobody's going to be getting, you know, water from this well. You know, there's going to come a time where people are not going to be worshiping in Jacob's well. They're not going to be worshiping here, but they're going to be worshiping in spirit and truth and so forth. So he started talking, going to the spiritual talk, you know, and she was like, hold up, wait a minute, hold up, brakes, put the brakes on. What you talking about? And Jesus said, hold up, before I tell you no more, he said, go get your husband and then I'll finish telling you. You go get your husband and then I'll finish telling you the rest. And she's like, well, dude, I don't have a husband. I ain't got no husband. I mean, y'all got to read this, right? Hear this thing like this was a real conversation, all right? Not like the Bible scholars read it to you. I guess a real conversation. She's like, dude, I ain't got no husband. And he's like, yeah, you don't. I know you don't got a husband. He said, you've been married 5 times and the man you're living with that you ain't even married to him. Oh, okay. So you know my life. You can read my book. Who you been talking to? You know somebody in my family? You know my cousin? Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. So what? What's the big deal? And Jesus says, yep, you done told me right. You got 5 husbands or you've been married 5 times and the man you live with, you ain't even. I'm going to give y'all guys a quick side note right here. We as the church, we have done so wrong by people, by judging them, and we need to stop. When we look at the life of Jesus Christ, we see in so many situations, he was condemned because he did not judge people. He was wrongly accused because he did not judge people. Jesus looked at the very people that we as the church judged, and you know what? He didn't judge them. Instead, he used them. This woman right here, Jesus called her out. You've been 5 husbands. That means you done been divorced 5 times, and the man you live with, you ain't even married to him. But she told her to go get him. This was never ever mentioned again in this story. This was the only time this was mentioned in this story. But as you go on in the story, you will see how Jesus directly, specifically used this woman for the cause of the kingdom. He didn't judge her. He used her. Side note, another whole lesson. Just want to throw that out there to you. Verse number 19, we're going on right here. I'm trying to hurry up, y'all. I'm trying to hurry up. Verse number 19 says, there's 19 to 20. She says, sir, you must be a prophet. Now that he done read her book, right? He done read her story, told her about her life. Oh, okay. You must be a prophet. You got to be a preacher, man. Where you from? Where you from, dude? You can tell me about my story. You know somebody, though. Oh, so you must be a prophet. In verse 19, he said, and then 20, he said, so tell me this. Tell me this. If you're a prophet, why is it that the Jews insist that Jerusalem is the only place to worship while the Samaritans claim that Mount Gerizim, I can't say that word right, all right? Gerizim, where our ancestors worshiped. No, you're a prophet man, right? You're a preaching man, right? So since you're a preaching man, since you know everything, since you know about my life, tell me, answer this question for me. Why is it that the Jews claim that Jerusalem is the only place of worship, but we, the Samaritans, we claim that Mount Gerizim is the place of worship because that's where our ancestors worshiped? Answer that question for me. So here's the deal. The conversation, it goes on and this is where we get this famous scripture from. Verse number 24, it says this, for God, Jesus begins to explain to her, you know, there's going to come a day where people are not going to be worshiping in Jerusalem, or Jerusalem is not going to be, quote unquote, the place of worship. It's not going to be, you know, Mount Gerizim. It's not going to be any other specific place of worship. There's going to come a time of day where true worshipers will worship in spirit and truth. He said, there's going to come a time of day where none of that stuff is going to matter anymore. all that stuff, it's not going to matter anymore. And he says in verse number 3, verse number 24, he says, for God is spirit. Those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. He said, baby, it ain't gonna matter where you live at. Baby, it ain't gonna matter where you from. It don't matter what city you from. It ain't gonna matter what religion maybe you from. He said, the only thing that's gonna matter is that those that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Those are the people that God is looking for. Okay, fast forward in this story. I'm trying to hurry up, y'all. So let's fast forward to the actual focus. Let's get to the focus of this thing. So now we see that Jesus is having a conversation with a woman at the well, and he's having a conversation. This conversation is involved in race. It's involved in ethnic. It's involved in culture, nationality. It's involved with him telling her about her personal life. Then this conversation gets religious. Now they're talking about worship. Whole lot going on in this conversation right here. Y'all ever have a conversation like that where you start off talking about one thing, you end up talking about five things?
Yes.
That's what happened right here. They're talking about it all, right? Her and Jesus having a great conversation. Fast forward, the focus here, Jesus reveals to her that he is the Messiah. When she was asking him this question, she said, he reveals to her that he is the Messiah. She believes him and she runs back and she tells her family, she tells her friends, and she tells a whole bunch of other folks that, hey, the Messiah is at Jacob's well. The Christ is at Jacob's well. Come out and see him. And she's telling everybody that she believed him. They're having this conversation. They're having this dialogue. And she's like, oh, my gosh, you are the Messiah. You are that dude. Okay. So she can bring all these folks out. All these folks come out there to Jacob's well to see this man, Jesus Christ, or Jesus who's claiming to be the Christ, Jesus that is the Messiah. And they came out because they kind of believed her. They was like, are you serious? She's like, yes, I'm serious, right? Now, think about this. Put yourself in this situation right here. This is how broad our community is, okay? Think about this. You have a woman who has been married and divorced 5 times. She's living with a man that ain't her husband. But yet, she speaks about the Messiah, and everybody follows her. How many women do you know in our community right now, if they would start talking about Jesus Christ and talking about Jesus in a very spiritual way right now and trying to get people to follow her and listen to her and to believe her, that they're going to follow and listen to her and believe her? I'll wait. They followed her. They went to Jacob's well. In verse number 40, he says this, 40 and 41. It says here in the Bible, it says, when they came out to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. They begged him. So this woman, who was a different nationality than Jesus Christ, who was able to recognize that he was a Jew because of maybe his hair, his speech, his clothes, I don't know, something that she knew. She knew, dude, you a Jew. Y'all don't even mess with us like that. Now she's telling everybody to come out to see this man. This man comes out there. Everybody comes out here to see this man. And when they see him, when they listen to him, they hear the words that are coming out of his mouth. They begged him. They begged him to stay in their village. So it goes on to say here in verse number 41, he says, so he stayed for 2 days. He stayed for 2 whole days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. He stayed there for 2 more days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. A simple conversation which led to a dialogue about race, ethnicity, religious differences, it led many people to believing that Jesus was indeed the Messiah. Their difference in race is beautiful in so many different ways, but together they are even better. The Samaritans and the Jews are different in so many different ways, but Jesus understood and he recognized and he was trying to show the world that even in their differences, they are better together. Their difference in ethnicity is full of history, both the Jews and the Samaritans. And this lady recognized it. She was like, wait a minute, our history, our ancestry includes Jacob. This is Jacob's well. There's a lot of history here. We believe that our place is the true place of worship. You believe your place is the true place of worship. A lot of history, which is beautiful history, in their ethnicity, in their ancestry. But even in its differences, there is a point, there is a point in time where they come together and they meet. There is a point in time in their ancestry, even in the differences, the rich culture, the rich history, there is a point in time, even in the differences, that they come together to a place and they meet. It makes them so much better. Their religious differences really weren't that different at all. They was talking about their religious differences, and even in their religious differences, they found out it's really not that different. We think it's different. He said, here's the deal. They had a difference of belief in which city was the city of worship, meaning the Jews and the Samaritans. I'm not speaking about Jesus specifically himself, the Jews and the Samaritans, their religious belief. One believed that Jerusalem was the city of worship. The other one believed that Gerizim, I can't even say it, was the city of worship. Both of them believe that there's a city of worship that's within their ancestry, that's within their history, in their religious beliefs. So they both believe in worship. Not only that, they believe in some other things that are the same too in their religious beliefs. But the understanding of, they understood who the Father was. Both of them believed in God. They understood who Jacob was. They both claimed Jacob as a part of their ancestry. And they both believed in a Messiah. You're talking about the Jews and Samaritans. They both believed in a Messiah. This woman says to Jesus, verse number 25, she says this. She said, I know the Messiah is coming. Before Jesus revealed to her that he was the Messiah, this is what she said. This is what she said. She said, I know the Messiah is coming. A Samaritan woman knows that there is a Messiah. And she knows that the Messiah is coming. Jews knows that there is a Messiah. They know that the Messiah is coming. She says, the one who is called the Christ. All she know him now is just Jesus. His name is Jesus. She don't know he's Jesus Christ yet. She said, the one who was called Christ. She said, when he comes, he will explain everything to us. In other words, dude, all this stuff we're talking about, we're having great conversation, we're having great dialogue, and we're talking about worship, we're talking about ancestry, we're talking about race and culture, we're talking about all this stuff. She said, but look here, I know you got some knowledge. You're a smart dude. I got to get it to you. You're a smart dude. I'm going to give you that one. And she said, you seem like a good man too. I'm going to give you that one too. She said, but I know that there is a Messiah coming. One who was called Christ. She said, when he comes, he's going to explain all this to us. You know what Jesus says to her? He says, I am the Messiah. He says to her, I am the Christ. Whew. Her mind was blown. She had to go back and tell everybody, he's here. He's here. In closing, we are constantly allowing our differences in culture, our differences in race, our differences in ethnicity, even our religion, to separate us from our brothers and sisters who are a part of our community. Our differences are real, but they should not be the reason for our separation. Our differences are beautiful. They should be shared together. We need to have dialogue with people just like Jesus and the Samaritan woman had. It will amaze us that what we will discover in having these dialogues, even, you know, that even our differences that we have, we'll find that a lot of our differences are in common. We'll find a lot of things that we are alike about than what we find that we are different about. You know, we'll find out that all of our that we're all connected somewhere along the line in our ancestry. We're all connected somewhere along the line. When we talk to people, we have dialogue with people. We're going to find a connection there somewhere, you know, that our religious beliefs they all have a common interest and a common goal. You know, when we talk about our religious differences and stuff, we're going to find, man, y'all believe the same thing we believe. We just believe this different. We believe that different. But is that and this going to cause us to go to hell or heaven? Or is that and this going to cause us to miss out on God or miss out on Jesus? But the things that we do have in common, guess what? They work. They work. They just do. They're better together. We need to be willing to go and to stay in other people's homes and their cities and in their countries. They begged Jesus to stay in their village. This was not his home. He was trying to get home. They begged him to stay there. He stayed for 3 days. The impact was that a lot of people in that village believed that he was the Messiah. You know, my friend in Costa Rica, I'm closing right now. I said that a minute ago, but I'm about to break it down. All right. This is it for real. I'm closing. My friend in Costa Rica, he asked me when I made the decision to go to Costa Rica. And I told you, I organized a team of 10 people and we went there to do some mission work, some missionary work. And I told him this. I said, I will come to Costa Rica on one condition. I said, we're going to label this a mission trip. Okay, cool. We can label this a mission trip. I said, but I am not coming to Costa Rica so that we can do a whole bunch of evangelistic ministries and outreaches and stuff. I said, I'll do some. I said, but that's not going to be the focus and that's not going to be the purpose of why I come. I said, if I come to Costa Rica, I'm coming to Costa Rica to work. I said, put me to work. Put us to work. I want to touch the lives of people in a way that when I leave, there's going to be something tangible that I can leave, that we can leave behind, that says that, hey, we love you. We love you. And you are a part of our family. You are a part of our community. You are us and we are you. I don't want to just go to somewhere and preach and get people saved and, you know, have a good old spiritual time and then leave and go back home. I said, I'm not doing that. He said, okay. He said, Pastor Brian, I got something for you. He said, come to the village with me. I said, okay, village was okay. What's that about? He said, there's a village that, I do ministry work in this village. And, they're indigenous people. He said, come to the village with me and let's go there and we can do some work. He said, they live a very primitive life and there's all types of work that we can do there. I said, okay, cool. Set it up. Woo. I didn't know what I was in for. But I'm gonna share some pictures with you. And then we're breaking it down. All right. So we went to this indigenous village. We traveled. It took us about 2 hours by vehicle to get to a certain spot. And then once we got to a certain spot, we had to hike through the forest about 30 minutes. We had our backpacks on us. We had some supplies with us and all kinds of things. So we drove for about 2 hours. And then we got dropped off at the edge of the woods, at the edge of the forest. And we had to hike the rest of the way. All right. Here's a picture of us hiking through the forest. We had to hike to get to this. He said, when he said a village, he really meant a village, right?
We were in the mountains.
And so here we are hiking and we get to this place and the one right here on the far right is Niels. He's one of my pastor friends there in Costa Rica. When I showed the pictures I showed you earlier of a young lady, Yvonne, and another girl, Raquel, those are his daughters. Anyway, we went to this particular village. We hiked there. We got there and, you know, it was very primitive. There was no electricity. There was no plumbing, no running water. There was no bathrooms, no toilets. There was no heating, no air conditioning. When the sun went down, everybody laid down because you couldn't see. It was too dark out there. There was no street lights, no nothing like that. So when the sun went down, everybody laid down to go to sleep because you can't do nothing. The day is over. Work while it is day. That's a real thing, okay? And we slept on concrete floors with our backpacks and, blankets, whatever we had on our backpacks. We used our backpacks as our pillows and we slept on the concrete floors, you know, in a hut. It was just a big old giant hut with a concrete floor.
Yeah. Yes, it was a hut.
It looked like similar to this thing right here that's behind us. You know, here's Marguerite with one of the natives of the village. You know, here's me and Yvonne. She's interpreting for me. This little square thing y'all see here is actually an outhouse that was by the church. We did some ministry here in the church. Here's Marguerite doing some ministry there. This is the church that my pastor friend Niels, they built out here in this particular village. We're painting the church. We built a brand new outhouse for the church. This is the brand new outhouse that we built. I had a friend go with me. He's an architect. And then I had another friend go with me. He's a general contractor. I said, hey, y'all design an outhouse for me. Let's go to Costa Rica and build an outhouse in the village. They said, okay, cool. They built a state-of-the-art outhouse. I said, man, what is this? We're not building an outhouse for the president. And so anyway, they built, that's the outhouse that they built. Here's the church. Here's Marguerite. Marguerite visited one of the schools there. But anyway, we went there and we had a great time. And it was such an amazing experience. And I tell you guys that sleeping on the floor, I opened up the wrong thing, my bad. Sleeping on the concrete floor in a hut with no electricity. And I know many of you, stop. I opened up a wrong app. Sleeping on a concrete floor, no electricity, no running water, no plumbing. And many of you will probably say, ain't no way in God's green earth am I going to do something like hiking through the woods, the forest for 30 minutes. Ain't no way on God's green earth would I do anything like that. I didn't think I would do it either, but I put my foot in my mouth and I told my pastor friend, I said, we coming to work. So he said, okay, we're going to a village. I said, okay, cool, line it up. We did it. I tell you, it was one of the best experiences in my entire life. In my entire life, it was one of the best. You know, we got there and we did some work. We impacted, we blessed, and we impacted the lives of the people that lived in that village. It was probably no more than maybe 40, 50 people that lived in this village. It wasn't a lot of people. Oh, totally away from civilization. You know, we did these things, and you know, the impact that they had on us is an impact that would last for a lifetime. The impact that we had on them is an impact that would last for a lifetime. And you know, it was so amazing, you know, just to be there and to do the things that we did. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. You don't have to leave your country in order to travel around the world and experience different cultures and different ethnicities, different races, different religious beliefs. You don't have to travel around the world to do that. You know what? You don't even have to leave your state to do that. You don't even have to leave your own city to do that. You could do that right where you're at. And here's the way you do it. When you meet people, when you come across people, maybe it's somebody that you work with, maybe somebody you came familiar with in your neighborhood, you know, somebody that stayed down the street from you, maybe it's somebody that work in a grocery store that you work in all the time. Guess what? As you get to know people, invite them, include them. When you have a cookout over your house, think about them and say, hey, you know, we're having a cookout in my house. Why don't you come over, hang out with us? You know, a lot of my family friends going to be there. We're going to be having a great time. You know, come on, hang out with us. Invite them. Maybe sometimes you go on a double date. You know, a couple of a different culture, a different race, a different ethnicity. Invite them. Say, hey, maybe somebody with a different religious belief than what you got. You know what I mean? Sometimes we stuck in certain people with certain religious beliefs. We just mess with them. Folks, they worship the devil. How you know? How you know they worship the devil? Have you had a real conversation with them? No, you haven't. You just assuming that they got. You know, go on a double date. You know, if you and your wife or your husband gonna go out, your boyfriend, your girlfriend gonna go out, think of somebody, invite them. Hey, y'all want to go out? We're gonna go check out the movie. We're gonna do dinner in the movie. Invite them. And you know what the reward is going to be? The reward is going to be that as they enjoy themselves and as they get to know you and you get to know them, y'all's horizon, y'all's mind is going to just grow. You're going to be traveling around the world, experiencing different cultures, experiencing different ethnicities, different things like that without even leaving your own city. And as you grow, you know, the thing is, here's another reward. They'll invite you to theirs. And as they invite you to theirs, go. Accept the invitation. Jesus was invited to stay for 2 days. And you know what he said? He said, I'll stay. When someone invites you, accept the invitation. Because they're including you in their community as we should include them into our community. Just like beans and rice are good together by themselves, they are even better together. Just like you and I are good in ourselves, we are better together with different people in our community. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If this message was a blessing to you and you would like to support this ministry in a financial way, you can donate electronically by texting to 84321 and enter the dollar amount you'd like to donate in the message area. Or you can mail a check or money order to Crosstown Church of Memphis, P.O. Box 40981, Memphis, Tennessee, 38104. We invite you to visit our website at www.wearecrosstown.com for more information about our church. Join us for our next broadcast next Sunday at 10 a.m. Be blessed and be better.